You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is the 20th of February 2017, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. As always, today I'm joined by my trusty co-host, Subal. Subal, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Excellent, excellent. So am I, and we've got an exciting podcast prepared for you today. And as always, we're going to start off with a little bit of Trump news. And I think I'll pass that over to you since you're most up to date with what's been going on over there at the moment, Subal. So just give us some of your thoughts on what's been happening with Trump recently.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about up to date, but I just wanted to say that he does seemed very much in control, and it was very nice to watch his press conference that he had earlier in the week. I watched the whole hour long press conference that he had, and he restated that CNN is not only fake news, CNN is very fake news, which I thought was hilarious. And all the journalists laughed as well, actually, funnily enough. But yeah, he does. He just looks very calm and collected. And it was just nice to see him looking so calm and collected, you know, considering the way that, the press is just going after him and slandering him and considering all the riots and considering all the rumors, that they're basically trying to organize a coup or get him indicted to, knock him off the post. He seemed very relaxed. And it was just a pleasure to watch him. And he stood there on the press conference, and he was telling the press, he was just like, "Look, you guys, you're just attacking me, and you don't talk about any of the good things that I've done, and you're just not serving the American people." And he said to them, he said, "I know what you're going to say in the headlines tomorrow. You're going to say Trump was ranting and raving and did it." And he said, "But I'm not ranting and raving, you know, I'm just telling you how it is, you know." And then sure enough, you know, I looked at the headlines and they're all saying, "Oh, Trump's out of control. He was ranting and raving and attacking everybody at the press conference." But he wasn't. He was very calm. He was very relaxed and he looked very much in control. So, yeah, it was a pleasure to watch.
Yeah, I watched bits of it. I saw the highlights of it. Fascist Lemming put together some highlights, which I thought were really good. One of the best things I think that Trump's doing is setting up this Department of in Homeland Security for victims of immigrant crime. I mean, that's the closest as we'll get, I think, to a department for black on white crime. So that was something really positive. And just at the end of the conference, the journalists there. Their comeback to Trump was just to say, "What about your tax returns? I mean, who gives a damn about Donald Trump's tax returns?
Yeah, right.
They're still whining on about these tax returns. That's all they can think of. Yeah, it's pathetic. Yeah, it was a really good conference. I like the way that he spoke down to the BBC. The BBC are even knocking Trump in their soap operas. They're ridiculing Donald Trump in the soap operas. I mean, that's how prevalent it is. It's not just on the news, not just on the comedy shows, right the way through the whole Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, it is knocking Donald Trump. So I'm just really pleased to see the way that he's standing up to them, the way that he's speaking about them. And he gave that huge rally in Florida over the weekend as well, which apparently went down very well. I think Melania Trump spoke there, and she's a really beautiful woman. I really like Melania Trump. She looks like, you know, she should be the first lady. They make a very impressive couple as the most powerful couple in the world, probably, or as people like to say, the American president is the most powerful man in the world. And, he's got his wife by his side. They've obviously got a good traditional relationship there between the man and the wife. She's obviously submissive to her husband. And this is some of the subjects that we're going to go into a little bit later. But I know you wanted to talk a bit about Ted Heath as well before we went into that, Subal. What's been going on there with Ted Heath then?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to mention it because it's on the front page of the Daily Mail, or I should say the Sunday Mail. And I do think that the Mail is probably the best newspaper that we've got in this country. I did sit down once and I looked through all the... I tried to figure out who owned all the different newspapers. I don't have the notes on me, sorry. But as far as I understand it, the Mail is owned by some aristocratic guy. I don't think it's owned by a Jew at all. The Express is, interesting enough, because the Express has been leading this so-called campaign to get out of the European Union. But if you see who actually owns the paper, I'm pretty sure it's a Jew.
But Jewish pornographer. Mail, anyway. Jewish sorry? Pornographer. He's a Jewish pornographer. He made his money in pornography.
Yeah, so there you go. But the Mail, I think he's an aristocrat. Anyway, look, the front... The headline is Police Chief Heath. Oh, sorry, Police Chief, and then quote marks. Heath was a paedophile, and I just want to mention the guy's name because I do feel like in this age we kind of live in an age where we don't have any more heroes. You know, it's like the last war hero we had was Lawrence of Arabia, and you know, obviously we should have got involved in that war in the first place. But it's always struck me over the years that we've had so many wars, we don't have any war heroes anymore, and we don't have any police heroes anymore, and we just don't have heroes anymore. So I just want to say, this guy, what's his name? Chief Constable Mike Veale. I don't know how to pronounce that. V-E-A-L-E. But he's been praised for his handling of the case, and they tried to make him back off the case because there were some dodgy things with the evidence, and there were a couple of other cases which turned out to be duds, and they were telling him to shut up. But he's kept going, and he's got like a 17-man squad, and he's been investigating for a couple of years now, and he says he is 120% sure that Edward Heath is basically a paedophile scumbag. And he needs to be lionized. I mean, he needs to be held up for being a real hero, especially in light of, I know, Morgoth's Review, he wrote a big article about this, that police chief, that female police chief in Rotherham, who oversaw all the young women getting raped, and she got sacked and she got promotion. And it's just utterly disgusting. So why can't we take this guy, a proper hero like this, actually chasing paedophiles, make him the head of the police force, would be much better. But it's great. I think it's very poetic because it was Edward Heath that dragged us into the European Union in the first place. And now we've got Brexit, and hopefully he's going to get dragged down into the mud and exposed as a paedophile. Although I'm not sure, because reading the article, the police officer does say that they're not even sure if they're going to release the, they'll probably try and cover it up. So we need to like stay on this story and make sure this does get properly exposed. But there you go.
That's very brave of him to take on the establishment like that. Did he know this at the time when this was going on? Is he just exposing it now? Or is this something?
This copper?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know the story about how he got... I mean, I guess they just put him on the job and he stuck with it. I don't know. But, I'm just saying, he's... they try to make him back off because there are a couple of other investigations into other high-profile politicians which turn out to be duds, which may have been their plan all along. You know, have a couple of investigations which are bogus and they know that they're bogus, and then that'll just muddy the waters, you know, make everything look like disinformation and so on and so forth. But anyway, this guy is sticking with it. He says he's 110%, 120% definitely sure that Edward Heath was a paedophile. He's got witnesses, you know. So good for you, mate. Yeah, bring him down. Tear him to pieces. I mean, they're all a bunch of paedophile scumbags. We know about... what's his face? Mine's gone blank.
Savile?
Savile, yeah. Jimmy Savile. We all know
that. There was the other one. There was that Labour politician, that huge, fat, obese, grotesque Labour politician as well, that turned out to be a paedophile. But the problem is all these allegations come out now, and it's too late.
In England, I think it's called Zionist. I forget what the hell it's called. Anyway, they went into it in depth, talking about all the paedophiles in the Labour Party. I mean, it's just utterly disgusting. There was the PI thing, wasn't it? The paedophile information exchange. It's just utter filth. And it's really good to see it all coming out. And it's really good to see Pizzagate gaining ground. Apparently, the FBI in America have made some arrests. They don't seem to be attacking the Pizzagate issue directly, but it appears that they are attacking these child kidnapping gangs. They're getting some low-level arrests, which hopefully will build up into some high-level arrests. So it may be, you know, like we've been saying on this podcast for, you know, weeks now, it may be the old blood libel. That's what it all comes down to. Tearing the system apart.
Could well be them involved in it. Yeah, I think the problem is, you know, that sort of stuff is so shocking to believe that right at the top of the establishment, you've got pedophiles acting and all the child sacrifice and everything else that we know goes on. And yet people just don't want to believe it because it's right at the top. And because people don't want to believe it, they're able to get away with it. I mean, that's how Jimmy Savile was able to get away with it, because nobody wanted to believe that this guy that, worked for all these charities and was friends with royalty and was BBC royalty, nobody wanted to believe that he was involved in it. So he was just able to do what he did. And when people did come forward and say what was going on, nobody believed them. You know, how could you say something like that about such a good person? How dare you? You know, these people weren't listened to. So, you know, the real shame of this is that these allegations were about and were being made in the 1970s, but it's not until now, in 2017, that we've got the police guy coming forward and confirming it. Because, you know, Ted Heath isn't here anymore. This is a problem. It's all very well coming out with it now, 50 years later, but what about back then? You know, this is why this Pizzagate thing needs to be investigated now. It's no good, nothing being done about it until 50 years time, when Podesta is no longer here, and you know the conspiracy's moved on somewhere else. It really does need to be investigated now. Well, I don't know if you want to add any more to that before we move on.
Yeah, I mean, just one last point. I mean, this is one reason why I am so positive about the future, and why I believe that we're gonna win this fight within the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. One reason why I believe this is simply because of the power of the internet. And you know, we've only had internet on a mass scale since 1996, really. So it's only been 20 years, and we've only had social media on since, I don't know, 10 years maybe. Facebook, how long has it been popular? I don't know, something like that, 10. Maybe 15, I'm not sure. But the internet is invincible. You cannot have a totalitarian government, and this is what the Jews have. They have a totalitarian government, brainwashing everybody, controlling everybody. You cannot have a totalitarian government combined with the freedom of speech that we have on the internet. And in my lifetime, I've watched this whole thing manifest, as I'm sure you have as well. I mean, first it's it was the truth movement, the 9/11 truth movement, all the crazy conspiracy theories, but that kind of hit a dead end and it ran out of steam, and now it's coming back in the form of the alt-right and getting more down into the nitty-gritty of the cultural Marxism and the Jewish issue. And it's just, it's impossible. It's impossible for these people to escape and to get away with it. This is why I'm so positive about Trump, because even if he does turn out to be I don't think he is, but even if he does turn out to be a bit cucked and a bit friendly of Israel, at least we know he's not going to close down the internet like Hillary Clinton would have. I mean, if Hillary had been elected, we'd probably all be in jail by now. But at least we know he'll allow freedom of speech on the internet to continue. And that really is, in my opinion, that really is all we need. Another 4 years, freedom of speech. Another 8 years, freedom of speech. You know, all the pieces of the puzzle are just fitting into place. I mean, they are for me, and I'm sure there's a whole generation of people out there like me and like you, Sven. All the pieces of the puzzle fitting into place, a whole body of knowledge, and suddenly it's like, oh right, it all makes sense. I get it. And that's invincible. So we're going to win. And this pedophile stuff, this is not going away. This fire and this anger, this public outrage is not going away anytime soon. It's going to burn and it's going to burn and it's going to burn the whole house down.
Yeah, the good thing is, it's sort of cross platform or cross organization grouping or whatever you want to call it. You've got the alt-right that are exposing it. You've got the conspiracy people that are exposing it. You know, the truth movement, they're exposing it. So, you know, everyone, all these alternative movements are exposing this Pizzagate thing. So hopefully it will get looked at. And the information and the knowledge that is, it is all out there. It is all available online. And you know, that's thanks to free speech and thanks to America still having the free speech laws. I don't think we would have it if America didn't have it. You know, if one country has, you know, has a certain law that the other countries don't, then, you know, anything on the internet will go to that country that allows it, basically. You know, if you're talking about things that are illegal in one country but not in another, then, you know, they can be got on the internet because it's all the countries are linked up together. So long as America continues to protect free speech, then that information, I believe, will always be there on the internet. And that you know, that's the wonderful thing. And that is something that we can all thank America for, I think.
We can thank Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, well, it's a shame that it was their laws were based on our British ones. It's just,
yeah.
You know, Britain, we've had three separate acts, I think, clamping down on speech, preventing us from being able to speak the truth. And because of that, everything is now turned around to the opposite of what it should be. You know, this feminism, what we're going to be talking about today, and male and female traditional roles, that's turned everything that's natural and the natural order on its head. You know, the natural hierarchy is God, then man, then woman, and then a child. If you put equality in that and say men and women are equal, who's going to have the final say? You know, in a marriage, who has the final say if you have equality in a marriage between a man and a woman? There's going to be constant arguments. You know, if the man has the final say, then you have an end to the debate. And the decision is made. But how can you make a decision if both sides are equal and nobody is accountable to anyone? At least with the natural hierarchy where God is at the top, the man knows that he's answerable to someone if he makes the wrong decision. And if he doesn't make a decision that's in the best interest of his wife. See, this is a thing. All our governments before have been run by men because the system of government was created by men. And the men did what was best for men, women, and children, and their ancestors. And now that we have feminism, you've got women wanting to do what's best for women. And they have no interest in what's best for men. And they work together with all females. They don't work together for the good of their race or for the good of their nation. They say that they do what they do for all females, for all women. And this is something which, you know, it really doesn't make a lot of sense to me, Subal, because, you know, they keep telling us that gender is just a social construct and men can turn themselves into women if they like. But you can't change your race. I mean, that identity is absolutely fundamental. Babies can tell someone of a different race before they can tell someone of a different gender. You know, they show a preference for people from their own race rather than they show a preference for, say, a mother of another race. It's that fundamental. And yet feminists will tell women that their loyalties should be to other women, no matter what race or what nation that they actually come from. And, you know, if you get these people into power, then they're not going to be doing what's best for everyone, what's best for society. They're just going to be doing what's best to take all social restrictions away from females' behaviour. And if you take away all the restrictions on a woman's behaviour, then their capriciousness knows no bounds. Traditionally, man is the one that put the restrictions on women's behaviour because they don't put any restrictions on their behaviour. That doesn't come naturally to them. What comes naturally to them is to keep testing until they get told they have to stop. And this is just the natural way that things are. And if you take away all those restrictions, you get the system that we have now, where women can't be held accountable for anything. You know, they will have a baby with an unfit father, but they're not held accountable. The state will provide the money for them. The state will take the money off the father. If they decide they don't like their husband, they will kick the husband out. They can just make something up, say beat them up or whatever, and that's it. The police will come and arrest him. They'll give the woman the house. He'll then have to pay for the rest of his life to pay for these children to be brought up. Women just are not actually made to be responsible for their actions. And that's what feminism is. Taking away all the social pressure to be responsible for their own actions. And I don't want it to sound like I am attacking women here. I mean, this is just the way that it is. And women are the way they are for a reason. They are the weaker sex. They are vulnerable. So they need to do everything they can to make certain that violence doesn't happen. So they manipulate men to make sure that that doesn't happen. A lot of the time with the promise of sex, you know, you're not going to go and punch someone or attack someone if you think you might get sex from them. So they will use the promise of sex to keep men in a state where they think they might get some, and therefore the woman feels safer. But in order to do that, that means that men are being manipulated. It leaves men confused. You know, they'll encourage men to lie in order to get sexual favors from them. And the more attractive and more powerful woman it is, the more she will get the man to lie. I mean, the most unsuccessful pickup line there is the straightforward one where you say, do you want to go to bed with me? You know, that is the most unsuccessful one. You have to pretend that you're doing something else. So they're encouraging you to be deceitful. And they will also, you know, this is another bit, they will give away things that are not their own. They will give away what the husband provides for. They will give that away to neighbors and friends. And we see this with the government giving away all our money in foreign aid. This is a female strategy. This is the way that females behave. And the reason for that is so that if the man throws her out, she knows that the rest of the tribe aren't going to throw her out too, because she's been nice to them. She's given things away to them. And this is all evolutionary psychology, which you've seen Dr. Kevin MacDonald do on the Jews. But the same thing can be applied to women and female strategies. And Simon Shepherd has done some amazing work on this subject. I recommend everyone check out his book, Sex and Power, which contains a lot of this. But once you take away all those restrictions and you allow women to have free rein in society, you end up with lots of confused men, lots of manipulated men. You end up with your society filled with foreigners, you know, for this very reason, that they then feel safer. And you end up with the children with no fathers, because the mothers are not made to pay for their mistakes. They're allowed to just sleep with whoever they want, and the state will then pay for it. So why should they have a husband if the husband is just going to put restrictions on their behavior? And naturally, they know within that they don't want this. They want a strong man who's going to provide for them, who's going to protect them, who they can support. But in order to find that man, you know, they've got to go through, all the men have got to go through the shit testing. To use the term. Yeah, constant shit test. And the man that gives into the woman, and does what the woman says, it's not going to end there. She's just going to keep upping the ante and demanding more and more and more and more and more until he puts his foot down, or until she finds another bloke that is more dominating and more able to provide for her. You know, what women say to you, what they say isn't necessarily what they mean. And you can see this again with the way they expect their boyfriends to psychologically and telepathically understand what they want, because they're not going to tell you what they want. They expect you to telepathically understand what it is what they want. So you have to understand that when a woman tells you she wants this, she wants A, a lot of the time she might actually be wanting B. And you're supposed to just know that. So there's these big, big differences between men and women that people just aren't told about anymore. We're just told that everybody is equal, and we're patently not equal. And until we face up to the fact that you know, we are different, men and women are different, we're never going to be able to concentrate on the most positive and best aspects of what it is to be male and female, because men and women are supposed to be working together, not competing together, which is what we have at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about the shit test, because that's basically what it all boils down to. It's all a giant shit test. And for people who don't know what that is, it's a term which, as far as I understand, it came from the seduction community, from people trying to pick up women. And it's basically you go and you try to, you know, chat up a girl. She's going to throw a line at you. She's going to say something horrible at you. And it's a test. Yeah, do you get upset by it? Do you manage to maintain your frame? And if you manage to maintain your frame and you're not fazed by it, and you don't let her have her way, then you pass the test. And if you get upset by it, or if you let her have her way, then you fail the test and you're psychologically weak. And it's basically it's a number of things, but one of the things is a method of picking out your partner. Basically, if you're a woman, you want to marry or you want to mate. I mean, if we're talking in like social Darwinist terms, you want to mate with a strong man, with a man who is psychologically strong. You want to mate with a man who's just not going to let you have your way every time you want to have your way. Because if he's weak to you, and if you can push him around, if the woman can push him around, then it means that other men are going to be able to push him around. And if other men can push him around, then he's not going to be able to, you know, protect her and provide for her and provide for the children. So it's a shit test. And women do this. I had one of my ex-girlfriends do this to me. We were walking down the street and I think we were just going for a walk, actually, just a stroll. And I wanted to walk down this road. She says, no, I want to go down that road. And I'm like, no. We're going this way. She's like, no. And then she's like standing there in the middle of the street just arguing with me. So I just walked off and left her. And then she like comes running after me. Literally. It's all, because you got to remember, they're just children at the end of the day. They never grow up. They never get older than 14. She just comes running after me. And then she's like putting her arm around me. She's like, oh. Because I refused to give in. And then she starts telling me it was just a test. You know, just openly. So they do this. This is what they do. It's their nature. And the whole of feminism is basically just one giant shit test. That's all it is. It's women testing their men, specifically white women testing white men, to see if they will cuck out and to see if they will give them their way. And it's been egged on by the Jews, who are whispering in the ears of the women, urging them on, and at the same time whispering in the ears of the men, urging them to give up and let the girls have their way. And the whole thing is, first wave feminism was the move to get the vote. That was a shit test. Second wave feminism, Betty Friedan's or whatever her name is. Second wave feminism was about putting women in the workplace. That was just a shit test. Third wave feminism, where it's all going completely crazy with you know, Fat Lives Matter, I like to call it Fat Acceptance, Fat Lives Matter. And it's all about lesbians and transsexuals and black women, etc. It's the same thing. It's a shit test. And this is why I always say, what is fourth wave feminism? It's Islam. That's the conclusion. And we've already seen it. We've already seen these crazy feminists, you know, converting to Islam. And they're like, yes, Islam is my real feminist, because that's what they want. They want to submit. They want to be dominated. The whole thing's just a giant test. And because white men have failed the test, because to be perfectly honest with you, feminism damages men more than it damages women in a way, because if men just continued to be men, it wouldn't matter how much, you know, women were complaining, that we'd still keep them in their place. It's our responsibility, and we have failed in our responsibility. And the end conclusion is that women, they open the borders and they let all the Muslims in, and then they miscegenate and they become Muslims, and that's it. That's the white genocide. That was always the goal behind feminism. That was you know, cooked up in the mind of Karl Marx and others. It was always the plan. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, the miscegenation that occurs, I mean, that's, you know, that should never be allowed to occur. I mean, no. The women, all females, you know, they mate with whoever is on their territory. You know, that's the same for all species on Earth. The females will mate with whoever's on their territory. And it's up to the males to ensure that that territory is kept free of alien males. Because there is a desire to mate with somebody who looks different, which if it's all white people, and it's all one nation, then that's good. You know, that brings a bit of variety into the DNA. But if it's someone from an entirely different subspecies that's in your territory, then that's devastating for the DNA of the nation. Absolutely devastating. So by taking advantage of this desire to mate with somebody different, what the Jews have done by calling for immigration of incredible, you know, vastly different subspecies of humanity into our countries, that they're destroying our genome with this. So it's just, again, it's just women's natural behavior, and it's men that have allowed it to happen, because we've stopped listening to our ancestors. We stopped listening to our grandparents, who knew how women behaved, and we stopped listening to them. We said, oh, they're silly fuddy-duddies. They don't know what they're talking about. Look at the way granddad talks to grandma, and grandma does everything for him. You know, that's because that's naturally the best way to be. And the women that serve their husbands, they are the happy ones. Feminism has not brought happiness to any women. They are far more miserable now than they ever were before. And if you look at it naturally, men are strong. We are physically stronger than women, and we're assertive because of that. And if you look at women, women are much weaker physically, and because of that, they are submissive, naturally submissive. So if you then say to the women, well, you're equal to the men, this is not a role they've ever had to play before in their whole history. So it's because they're physically not strong, they shouldn't be assertive. So they mistake assertiveness for aggressiveness, and they become aggressive. They're not fit to play these roles. That what they are fit for is a completely different role, something which men cannot do, which is childbearing and producing milk and bringing up children. Something that men cannot possibly do. This is the most valuable thing about a woman, is that she can do this. And feminism has said, no, don't do the thing that makes you of the most value. Go out there and compete with men who are a third stronger than you are, and who have completely different brains to you as well. I mean, we think logically. Women tend to think more emotionally, because both sides of the both hemispheres of the brain, the logical side and the emotional side, are far more connected up with women than they are with men. So emotions bleed into logic, and logic bleeds into the emotions, and they think in a completely different way to the way that men think. I've actually got a really nice list of the different ways that men and women react to things, or just the differences, the common opposites between men and women. And this comes from Simon Shepherd's book. And men reduce the costs of sex. Women increase the costs of sex. And that's their main strategy. A women's main strategy is to increase the costs of sex. Males compete. Women conspire. Males are polygamous. Women are monogamous. Males seek rapid resolvement. Women prevaricate and prolong. You see this a lot with arguments, you know. I mean, you must be similar to this with me, Subar. I mean, if you have a falling out with someone, you want to sort it out straight away. Whereas women will want to prolong that and bring it up again a few weeks later, maybe a few months later.
They never forget. Yeah. They never forget.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I mean, that's a common proverb, isn't it? You know, women never forget. Men are active. Women are passive. Men like conflict and competition. Women would rather compromise. So again, you get, you know, the New World Order. Instead of nation states competing with one another to be the best, you end up with them all working together under a supranational government. So we're actually under Big Sister. We're not under Big Brother.
Big Sister, yeah.
Yeah.
Men, like that, yeah.
Yeah. Again, that's another Simon Shepherd one, that Big Sister. Men encourage the strong. Women Nurture the Weak. Now, that's completely natural, isn't it? Because women are created to look after the children, to bring children into the world and look after them. Whereas men, yeah, we want to encourage the strongest among us to be, you know, to protect the nation and provide for the nation. So we want to encourage the best. Whereas women naturally want to encourage the weak. Men value old life. Women value young life. The male primary domain is the thing, you know, the gadget, all these things that we create. And women's primary domain is relationships. Men innovate. Women imitate. Men hide or inhibit emotions. Women display emotions. Men are endogamous. They resist invasion. Women are exogamous. They welcome outsiders. And we see this time and time again, don't we? All these refugees welcome demonstrations. You know, nine to one, 10 to 1, it's women that are doing this and welcoming in the outsiders. Even though
there's just a...
Come on, I was going to say, sorry, even though they...
When you said that, I had the image in my mind of when the Europeans, when we went out and explored the world, you do get this image of the native women, you know, of Hawaii or whatever, and they come out with the flower garlands and they welcome the men, you know, like Pocahontas, isn't it? So you can see that there. I don't know what the natives thought of that.
It cuts both ways, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
you know, it just shows you. I mean, these things can be predictable. Men like a low population density, women like a high population density. Men create wealth, women consume wealth. That's perfectly natural. If the women weren't there demanding things, then the men wouldn't really create things. I mean, the Hindu texts say that the man was there just to be spiritual and offer up prayers. But we needed to get things built, so the woman was created, nagging at him to build a house and get her this, that, and the other, to provide for the children. It's a natural system.
It's well recognized in India that if you get a wife, it's the death of your spiritual life, basically. That's why they value celibacy so much. And it's 100% true. It's, you know, if you want to develop a strong relationship with God, you basically have to, you can't do it with a wife. You just can't do it. You're going to get dragged down into material life.
No, and again, you got that dishonesty bit. We're encouraged to be dishonest to meet one anyway in the first place. And that's why you have celibacy in all our religions going way back. Men have a desire for privacy. Women have a lack of secrecy. You know, they don't like privacy. And look at what we have now, how intrusive the internet has become with Facebook and all this logging everything, all this fear, this constant fear. We must know what the citizens are up to. If we don't know what the citizens are up to, then, you know, it could be terrorist attacks. There could be this, that, and the other. Surely none of that is worth being so intrusive that you log everyone's conversation. I mean, this is a female thing, because women are weaker, they're more vulnerable, they're constantly at risk if violence flares up. So they want to take every possible precaution just in case. So that's a female strategy. Yep. So this intrusive surveillance state we have, it's a female strategy.
They do like to gossip, though. And I just to interject an idea here, because this is a thought which has been running around my head. I mean, a lot of people talk about how to get women involved in the alt-right. And it strikes me that women in general are not interested in the kind of philosophical ideas that the men of the alt-right discuss. But what they are interested in is gossip. And I think if you wanted to bring like masses of women into the alt-right and into white nationalism, you just have to bombard them with kind of like gossip like subjects, like celebrity gossip. You know, this stupid celebrity tramp is having sex with a black man, you know, that kind of stuff, or this stupid celebrity tramp is having sex, because it all boils down to sex. I mean, it basically all gossip boils down to, is she a slut or is she not a slut? That's what they're all talking about at the end of the day. You know, did she violate the sexual taboos or not? So I think if we want to bring women in mass into white nationalism, it'd probably be a good idea to have like a really good gossip like gossip column channel.
Well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, women's primary domain is relationships. So of course they like gossip. But the problem is, if you had women in the alt-right, what they're more concerned with is making a safe space for women. They would try to make the alt-right safe for women. So that is what their concentration would be on. So you would then see the invitation of outsiders into the group. You would see the policing of what was said so that no aggression was shown. Because obviously aggression gets shown, they're the weaker sex. So that they want to get rid of all of that. So that's what their primary aim would be, is to turn it into a place that's safe for women. And we see that in women in the alt-right that are calling for more women in the alt-right. You know, they want to make it more female friendly. You know, that's the primary aim, is to make it more female friendly. The alt-right, politics, that's a man's thing. Women should be involved, but to support their men when their men go out to do this. You know, men need the woman there to be supportive and supporting them. And each man needs to be king of his castle. You know, he needs the equivalent of his own nation there. He needs his wife and his children and his whole tribe there, with him at the top and looking up to God above him. Mm. And you know, that's the natural hierarchy. That's the way that it works. Got one couple more here. Men take
it's just,
risks.
Just to add a reply to that. Yeah, it is a very it's a very contentious issue. I mean, I had a friend the other day. She was a girl, actually, and I was telling her about the Daily Stormer, and she just said, "Well, it's just a sausage fest." And I thought, "Well, yeah, you're kind of right, you know, but it kind of is, and that's what it's all about. It's about men trying to kick out." I was going to say something really disgusting then, but I don't think I will say it. But yeah, it is. It's about angry men wanting to protect the women, and I kind of like that. I like the brotherly aspect of it, and that you could just say whatever you want. Like, we're having this conversation and we don't have to worry about insulting any girls, so it's nice. But at the same time, everybody knows that we do need women in the alt-right. I mean, we've got to find wives at the end of the day. You've got all these young men interested in white nationalism. We've got to get them married and we've got to have them making white babies. So I personally think we need to idolize married women and wives. We need to. There's a YouTube channel called Wife of the Purpose, and I thought she was okay, but I actually watched one of her recent videos and she was kind of making fun of millennial woes, so I don't think she's so good anymore. But we need something like that, like a YouTube channel, or if a woman in the alt-right wants to take a leadership position, she should be married and she should have a baby. And then she could talk about, you know, women's stuff, how to bake cakes for your husband and how to run a household and how to, stop your children from getting brainwashed by the Jews and that kind of stuff. And then put them forward as the role models instead of putting, you know, I'm not going to name names, but, you know, instead of putting more kind of like feminist kind of women forward as the role models. That's what we really need to do.
I mean, if you want to get something done, you know, men want to get something done, something achieved. I mean, the last thing you'll do is invite a woman along. You know, she'll be the centre of attention. She'll distract all the men from what they're doing. The men will then be competing over her because each one will subconsciously want sexual favours. You know, and it will just cause chaos. I mean, I've seen it happen. Seeing this happen. Yeah. Because there is a rarity of women in the alt-right and in nationalism, and you know, it can cause all sorts of problems between friends and people competing over them. It's attracting more women to the alt-right as a political movement or as a movement for change or activism. You know, that's not a good thing. Attracting women to alt-right men, that's a very positive thing.
Yeah.
But once you get men that are traditionalist, nationalist, high morals, promoting virtue, then the women will come to them. You know, and we do see this. You know, the women want to know who the man is that isn't drunk, that is, you know, that is, you know, that looks sharp and aware and is not distracted by everything else that's going on around him. The man who keeps a calm head in the storm. You know, there's a fantastic poem by, I think it's by Rudyard Kipling, all about what it means to be a man. And that's what men need to be like. If you're like that, then, you know, the women will flock to you. You know, it doesn't matter what you look like. It's all about, you know, how you are with women. But, you know, I've got a couple more here. Go on.
No, sorry, just one more point. There is this this situation with the ISIS brides, isn't there? You get these women, and they give up their comfortable Western lifestyle to go and live in a war zone and to marry an ISIS soldier. And why do they do that? It's because they're attracted to, you know, hyper-masculinity. I mean, obviously, you know, ISIS needs to be destroyed. But you've got to give it to the Muslims. I mean, they're fighting for a cause. They're warriors. And they don't take any shit from their women, basically. And women are drawn to them. I mean, they get on a plane. They fly all the way out to Syria to you know, probably die and to marry some soldier. So, yeah, I think you're right on that point. As long as we keep being, you know, hyper-masculine, then, yeah, the women will come to us.
Oh, yeah, those men over there, I mean, they're fighting for their ideals. They're different ideals to ours. They're fighting for Sharia law. But the women find that attractive. You know, all the men working together to try and create a better life for Muslims, of course they're going to find that attractive. And they're going to think, well, what can I do to help? Well, as a woman, you know, every one of those men is going to want a woman there for support, you know, to talk to. The best thing that women are good at is the gossiping and the relationships. Those men are all going to want someone to confide in, someone to keep the bed warm at night, that, you know, nice warm bed that they come home to after days head chopping or chucking gays off roofs or whatever else it is. You know, and that's the way these women think. You know, how can I help? Well, that's the way that I can help. So they go out there and they're attracted to it. Now, we've got a couple more. Men take risks and women avoid risks.
Yeah.
And men resolve neurosis and women induce neurosis. Women will tell you two different things at once. You know, they'll tell you to think one way, and then when you start doing things one way, they'll want it done another way. So you're in a constant state of confusion. Whereas men would rather have a rigid structure to things, so that we know what we're doing, we know what the goal is, and once the goal is achieved, we can then move on to something else. And this risk taking, you know, all the amazing achievements of the past have been done by men because we take these risks. Women naturally don't want to take risks because their natural instincts are to be looking after children. The last thing you want to be doing if you've got three or four young children there is taking risks. But if you want to move forward and progress as a civilization, you need people to be taking risks and trying new things. This is why men have invented everything in the past, because we take these risks, because we want to try out these new things. If you put women into that role, then, you know, we're not going to progress. We're not going to get very far at all. I mean, everything about feminism is bad to the individual, bad to the relations between men and women, and it's tragic for the nation. You know, it's a really serious problem that these Jews have introduced. You know, just as you were saying at the beginning when we were talking about this, Subal, it's all Jews that are involved in this. You can look it up online. You can see a list of them all. All the prominent feminists were Jews. And this goes back to the cultural Marxism and the Frankfurt School and criticizing everything that there is about Western civilization and empowering these minority groups. Women weren't a minority group before. You know, women were wives and sisters and mothers. That's what women were. But now the Jews have turned them into this group that's separate from their husbands and their brothers, separate from their nation, that are all together in this group which doesn't actually have races and nations. It's just all females, whether it's, you know, a Sudanese negress with her bits chopped off, or whether it's, you know, a white woman in America, that apparently they're all sisters. It's the sisterhood. And it's just used to batter away at men. And it's caused so much damage, you know. I mean, the suicide rate with men is incredibly high. And when you actually look at, you know, the differences between the men and women, I mean, just think about how many men die earlier. You know, we all die of an earlier age than women. There are far more of us in prison than there are women. You know, something like 99 men to every one woman that's actually in prison. You know, women get their pensions earlier. They don't have to do any of the hard physical jobs that we do. You know, there's big differences between us, and yet they call for equality, but they don't actually want equality. What they want is just to have things better than men. And they had better than men. They could have stayed at home. They could have had everything done for them. And when you think about it, women were actually the biggest employers when they were the wives of the husband and when they stayed at home, because they were responsible for organising all the servants and the house stuff and everything that needed to be done around the house. So they were actually the biggest employers, but they did actually stay at home, and they could study while there. They could play with the kids, teach the kids, learn while they were teaching the kids. You know, all the natural things that a woman is good at find their expression in bringing up children. They don't find their expression trying to compete with men, pretending to be men, going in the army. I mean, that's got to be the most ridiculous thing, I think, Subal, is putting women in the army and putting women in
the fire service brigade.
Yeah. I mean, how that's the last thing you want to see if your house is burning down, is some 5-foot woman coming through the door. How's she going
to
carry
out? She wouldn't even get through the door. She wouldn't even make it through. All she can do, really, at the end of the day, is drive the fire truck. That's about it, you know. Maybe make a cup of tea afterwards when everybody's finished.
Well, that's an important role, is the tea making, isn't it? You know, that is an important role.
It's the same thing with the police force. I mean, I remember when I was a boy, you know, you couldn't become a police officer unless you were 6 foot tall. It was impossible. So all the policemen in this country were tall and they were strong. And because they were tall and because they were strong, they were respected and you wouldn't mess with them. But then they let women in, and then they had to let anybody in because women are obviously short. So now you've got a bunch of short ass runts in the police force, basically. And nobody's got any respect for them anymore. And so you've got, you know, the crime is just completely spiraling out of control. It's a total disaster. It's a total disaster putting women in the workplace. I mean, there's also the issue that you just raised about, you know, they confuse everything. I mean, what do you think happens when you put women in a corporation? Everything becomes about sex. You can't concentrate on your work anymore. People are just thinking about how they're going to screw the secretary or whatever. It's just no wonder we're not producing stuff anymore. It's a disaster. And I just want to make a point that, you know, the obvious reply to this from women is that, oh, you just hate women. No, I don't hate women. I love women. Women are wonderful. Women are beautiful. There's nothing better in this world than a mother's love. There is nothing better in this world than a wife who looks after her children and who looks after her husband. I mean, that's what we're fighting for at the end of the day. That's what the entire fight is about. We want to have our white wives looking after our white children in our nice, cozy white homes. We are, the entire white nationalist fight is for white women to protect them. So no, we're not misogynists. Actually, it's the feminists that are the misogynists. They hate women. And they hate their own femininity, and because they want to become men, they deny their own natural instinct, they deny the natural law, and they spit in the face of housewives like this Jew, Betty Friedan, or whatever her name is. She wrote this book in 1963 called, what was it called, The Feminine Mystique. This kicked off second wave feminism, and it's all about, basically, the book's all about housewives, and she interviewed some of her friends and discovered all her friends who are unhappy because they're housewives. So she inspires them to go and, you know, get jobs, get careers. So it's basically, instead of inspiring women to get married when they're young and beautiful, they inspire women to give the best years of their life to men that don't love them, you know, just having casual sex with boyfriends. And then they inspire them to go to university, get a massive student debt, and then to go and work for a corporation and just to become a slave to a corporation instead of having children, instead of raising a family that loves you. You go and work for a corporation. What's spiritual about that? I don't know. Women are always claiming that they're more spiritual than men. Or what's spiritual about working for a corporation? I don't know. And then And then when they're 30 and they're not beautiful anymore, they marry some guy and they have a couple of kids, but the marriage is always unhappy because, you know, once you've had a certain number of boyfriends, it's always difficult to settle down. And the man that they marry, he can't get a decent wage anymore to look after them, because you've got basic rules of economics whereby if you double the supply, you halve the value of the thing. So if you double the workforce by putting all the women in the workforce, it means you halve the wages. So a middle class family cannot survive on a single wage anymore. You can't make a good living. So both people have to work. So they effectively, what these feminists do, and they hate women, they have forced women, first of all, spit in the face of housewives, and then they, through economics, they force them to enter the workforce, to work for some slave corporation. And then when they're tired, they come home, and then they do the housework. And, you know, and then they get fat, and they get miserable, and they get stressed, and they argue with their husbands, and the whole thing's just a giant mess. I don't hate women. I love women. And women need to get married when they're young, 16, 17, 18. Marry a nice guy who's 2, 3, 4 years older than you. Have 5 kids, 6 kids, 7 kids. And, you know, repopulate the white race. And have a beautiful family. Have a beautiful family. I mean, what the hell's wrong with that, you know?
Well, we don't want to be competing, you know, with women. This is a real problem with it. I mean, you've got men that are perfectly capable of doing things. We've invented everything for the last 2,000 years. All of these inventions, we came up with all these systems, the whole of the structure of society, you know, the government, the establishment, everything. It was all created and run by men. And obviously, we are the best ones to maintain it. So instead of having us maintain it, we say, oh, no, we'll put women doing it now, and we'll have to make all these exceptions for them. We'll have to make all these laws. We'll have to prevent all this sexism. So we'll get the women doing things. Most of the time, they're not quite as good as men. And you only have to look at the, you know, the sports to realise that they're not as good as men. They have to have separate women's sports instead of, you know, all competing in sport together.
And, nobody watches it either. Who watches women's football? Nobody.
Well, we have to clap and applaud and say, oh, look, you know, that's the best women's football team. So what? You know, men are much better at it.
It's usually a bunch of fat lesbians, isn't it?
Why are they even bothering to do that? You know, that's something that men are obviously much better at. Women should be doing things that women are much better at than men, or things which men can't possibly do, which is bearing children and bringing children up. And when you do put them in the workforce, and this is something that you touched on there, Subal, is, you know, the problems that you get by just, you know, men being turned on by them. And then being distracted, and then ending up having an affair, or ending up doing favours for one particular woman in the shop area, the work area, or you end up with a woman doing favours for a man in that area, or she doesn't do favours for one of the other men, but she does for, you know, the ones that she likes. You end up with all these problems that are caused by the difference in the way that we perceive sex, because women's main value is sex, because that then they can produce children. That's the one thing that they can give to a man that has value that a man can't do for himself. He's got to have a woman for sex. So that's their main selling point, is having sex and producing children. So if you put that in the workforce where the men are working, you know, she's going to be trying to make use of that. She's going to be trying to make herself look as attractive as possible, which is just natural for a woman to do. And that's going to distract the men. The men are going to be competing for sexual favours instead of working together to come out with the best solution to whatever it is they're trying to come up with, or whatever the work is. I mean, you can apply this to everything.
What also is interesting, how the feminists, they seem to deny that women have ever had power in the past. I mean, look at the Queen. The Queen was an incredibly... not our queen, but queens in the past, you know, they were incredibly powerful people. I mean, you're married to the king, for Christ's sake. You're like, you're the queen. You think you don't have any power? You think all the princesses and the aristocratic ladies of the past didn't have any power? I mean, they were incredibly powerful, but they understood that their power came, you know, from their husband, and it was a different type of power. And, And these women, they present this image that they've just been abused. They've been abused by the evil patriarchy for thousands and thousands of years. And then all of a sudden now they're all free and they're liberated. It's just absolute garbage. Sorry, I had to say that. But,
do you know what they used to say? I mean, when you used to get a real hero or somebody really special in history, you know, they would say, oh, he's a real credit to his mother. You know, that was what they used to say. Whenever anyone did anything spectacular, it was he's a real credit to his mother. You know, it was the motherhood that was, that was given all the gratitude for that, for bringing somebody up in the right way and teaching them, and it's a real credit to them. That's what mothers are for, is to encourage their children, nurture their children, tell them that they're much better than they actually are, to give them confidence. All these things that women are good at, that men are not good at. And the mother is the best person that's placed to do that. If she's out at work, I can't think of anything worse, putting your children in with somebody you don't know to look after your children. The best years of your children's lives, they're only children for, 10 years? And you're going to spend all that time working? You're not going to spend that time, with your children, so that you've got those memories when you're in your old age. It's an absolute nonsense, this feminism. Now, when I was at school, I couldn't believe it. I thought nobody's going to fall for this. I mean, this really is nonsense. It's not going to make women happy. And there were two or three girls that really did fall for it, and they went through a lot of blokes, and they ended up getting pregnant before they were married, and ended up making right messes of their lives. And nowadays it's just huge. It's all on the television. Everyone's a feminist. David Cameron is proud to be a feminist. Politicians are asked if they're a feminist, and if they say no, that's it, that's their career done for. They've got to all approve of feminism. And it's got like that just in the last 30 years. We're gonna have to turn it around. We are going to turn it around, especially at SS Britannia, because we come to the end of the podcast, Subal.
It's a giant train crash, basically. And I think a lot of the burden lies in the fathers, to be honest with you. And in traditional European society, you would have to ask the father's permission before you married his daughter. And this is the kind of thing, we need to bring back. I don't know if we can bring back arranged marriages. I mean, if you go back far enough in European culture, you'll probably find that, obviously the aristocrats had arranged marriages, but you'll probably find that even normal people had kind of arranged marriages. But I think fathers need to protect their daughters, basically. I mean, if you've got a daughter and you're letting your daughter run around like a slut, having sex with different guys, then you failed as a father. And it's one thing to shame women, and we do need to shame women for being sluts, but we should also start shaming dads for letting their girls be sluts.
Well, you're right. It comes down to men at the end. At the end of it.
Yeah.
We're the stronger ones.
It is our responsibility. And there is a danger when talking about feminism that I've seen, that you can, it's kind of also a MGTO kind of attitude, where you end up playing the victim card, and we the men, we're the victims of evil women. And I'm not denying that feminists do have massive amounts of power, but at the same time, it's a subtle point, but you have to be very careful not to slip into the victim mentality, because at the end of the day, in the natural order, it's ours. The power in society lies in our hands. It's there for the taking. It is ours. Excuse me. So we have to be careful about slipping into that victim mentality. And I think we really need to shame fathers for letting their daughters act like slags. You can shame women, but shaming the dads as well, I think, would help.
Well, men, we are the ones that have all the strength in society. You can't blame women for doing this. This is just what women naturally do. We are the ones that have allowed them to do this and have allowed it to get this far. Individual cases, you might have individual victims, but men as a group, white men as a group, we've allowed this to happen, and we're the ones who've got to put a stop to it. Subal, thank you very much for coming on once again. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Monday, same time, same place, on Radio Aryan for more SS Britannia for you. We hope you have a wonderful week ahead of you.
system on RadioArea.com.